Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. We have all had times when we were outside in the bone-chilling cold. You know what I'm talking about. Your cheeks start to hurt a bit, the tips of your fingers start to feel numb, your toes ache. Most of us are lucky enough to have a place to go to get warm, but there are some in Northumberland who don't. On February 20th, people across the county are going to be asked to support a walkathon called The Coldest Night of the Year. It is meant to raise awareness about homelessness and also raise money for the Greenwood Coalition. I will speak with Phil Redford, the event organizer, and David Sheffield, the executive director of the Greenwood Coalition. They will tell us about its impact on those who face homelessness, addiction, and who live in the margins. Here is that interview. I'm so pleased to have with me today Phil Redford, the event chair of the Coldest Night of the Year Walk in Northumberland, and David Sheffield, executive director of Greenwood Coalition. Gentlemen, welcome to Consider This.
I appreciate this opportunity, Rob.
Yes, thank you very much, Rob. Glad to be here.
David, I noticed a post on social media where you were celebrating a person moving into some permanent housing. Can you start off by telling us why this is something you feel is worthy of sharing?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a rare treat these days. I mean, the housing crisis has been going on for a few years, and I know that probably some people get tired of hearing about it. But for folks that are struggling on the fringes of homelessness or experiencing homelessness, it's not very hopeful. And so when something like this happens, where a solid, affordable situation comes up, and somebody can move from homelessness into a permanent home, we really need to celebrate that and kind of enjoy that, because that's a big part of what we're trying to do. I mean, that's the first part of what we're trying to do, and so it was a great. And so last week we helped one person move into permanent housing, and later this week we're helping another person to move into permanent housing. So kind of a big week around our world.
I noticed that when we celebrate something, it's because something is rare. Is this a rare occurrence in Northumberland?
Yes, unfortunately, we haven't. We've seen very little increase in the number of rental units across Northumberland County, and as many of us have noticed, the real estate shift, a lot of demand for real estate, and the prices going up, and then that affects. Rental housing being built. If it's easier and faster to sell a property or to sell some condominiums, that's what's going to get built, not new rental units. And there are some online now, and I think that a couple of years from now we'll be able to point to a number of new projects that Northumberland County has been involved with, and a couple of private things. But it's slow moving, and the demand is growing at such a rapid pace, and we certainly saw that through the year with the pandemic. A lot of increased need for low cost housing, and a lot of the folks that we're working with, coming from homelessness or very much on that edge, those folks, they're just not in the market. They don't have the income to meet most apartments that come available. And so when something does work together with a fairly priced apartment or room, plus in some cases a subsidy for a period of time that supplements that rent and ensures that person can successfully stay there, that's it stands out a little bit on our horizon.
We are in the process of going into our second emergency order, and things are going to get even more locked down than they have been for the last number of weeks and certainly since the spring. Can either one of you, I guess, Phil, maybe you can start off with this one. Can you give us some idea of what the impact is going to be?
Well, thanks for that question, Rob. We are concerned about the second order, but we have a fully virtual component to our walk that can be switched over as quickly as we need. What we've opted for is a blended walk. What will influence the fact that we may or may not be able to do in-person walks is the fact that the limits of assembly will impact how many walkers we could have potentially gather at a point in time. With a blended walk, we can give the option to the walkers to decide, well, I'm not comfortable in person, so I will just charge on with, so to speak, with the virtual component. Those who do feel comfortable, should things be lifted in time, we could, in fact, still accommodate the in-person. Because unlike years past, we won't have a big send-off with any gathering. There would never be any indoor component. We've had to submit a full COVID-19 plan. So we are ready to go either way. And we're fairly confident that there's a big awareness of the need out there this year. Our donors have stepped up and we've got teams coming. It makes it a little more difficult to reach out to folks, but we're confident that we can make that switch if we need to.
Let's just step back a little bit in case people are not familiar with the coldest night of the year. Can you tell us what this event is?
Absolutely. Coldest night of the year, run under the auspices of Blue Sea Philanthropy, which is the parent corporation, is a national walk to aid local charities in fundraising for the purposes of those who work with the hurting, the hungry, and the homeless in our communities. In the past, the walk has been fully in person. We have approximately 144, give or take a few, locations across the country. So it is a national walk. The beauty of the walk is that any funds raised remain in the community. So we are walking for Greenwood Coalition. We have had many teams in the past. For example, last year we had 44 teams, 259 walkers. Traditionally, we have set off from the Port Hope High School, renting space there. We would have a big send-off. Often we have dignitaries, perhaps mayors, things like that. We have quite a range of activities for people who gather, and then we leave from there en masse. Going on the walk, each walker receives a toque, and we have a lot of fun walking through the streets of town. The profile is fairly high, with sponsorship signs, and a good time is had by all. Either the 2K or the 5K walk can be done, and we have traditionally had most of the walkers experiencing about a 5-kilometer walk, whereupon they'll return to the high school for a chilly dinner. What we really strive for is to give people the idea, impression, and feeling of what it's like to be cold. And not just cold for a little while. We hope that as people experience this walk, they'll think to themselves, yeah, my feet are getting cold. I wonder what this might be like if I was living rough, homeless, hungry, or hurting. What that entails is the ability of people to empathize. And so that's why the in-person really works so very well. Over the course of the years, we've been steadily increasing the amount of fundraising. And last year, we raised almost $72,000, which stays in the community. It's a sizable chunk of the budget for Greenwood Coalition. And again, this year, we're relying on our donors and walkers and teams to help us out. Should they have to switch virtually, things will be a little bit different. The walk takes place on February 20th. If those who wish to do the in-person part of the event can show up. If we switch to virtually, we will send out word and walkers will be able to, with very small groups, with those with whom they live, to do their own walk in their neighborhood. There are various ways that they could record this, verify this, and do that virtually. That could take place potentially at any point in February. If we need to switch to the virtual component, we will do so fairly quickly. We have all of the necessary email connections, and we will let people know immediately once that decision has been made, if it needs to be made.
David, this event is very important in terms of the financial stability of Greenwood Coalition. Can you give us a picture of what the finances have been like this year, particularly within the context of the pandemic?
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. Greenwood Coalition is dependent on some fundraising events and donors in the community. I mean, that's how we've been built. We're a community-based organization. We don't have any sort of annualized funding. We're not on any government budget. So that's there's pros and cons to that. One is that we're dependent on the goodwill of the community, but the pro of that is that we live in a great community that has supported us well over the years, and keeping up those relationships and involving those individuals who support us in the bigger story is so important to us. This year has been an interesting year, and I think we've felt that support through the year from our usual partners, and made a few new friends as well as people became aware of what the need was in the community, and so that was very encouraging for us. And then the other piece was access to emergency funds from governments and also in our own community from the United Way, from Cameco, those bodies kind of redirected some of how they were funding. We were out there, we were on the streets, we were doing the work, we showed up. And so we received some of that support through this time. And so the financial part hasn't been difficult this year. And we've been able to increase our staff a little bit using some peer support staff, folks with lived experience, lived experience of homelessness, addiction, et cetera, who have been able to join us on staff. And so that's been a really big boost for us. So in a way, it was a growing year for Greenwood Coalition.
Can you just tell us what your annual budget was year before, and then what your budget's been this year?
Yeah, so our fiscal year is a calendar year, and we are in 2019 our budget was around 200,000, and in 2020 it looks like probably close to 100,000 more than that. So that represents that extra staffing, extra work that we've been able to do to put some more feet on the ground during the pandemic, as we've done that kind of outreach and individual support in a different way this year.
That's rather phenomenal, because so many of the groups that I've talked to over the last year have been struggling financially to have be in a rare position to have additional monies and to be hiring people. Seems rather outstanding, if not unusual. So tell me a bit then about what the levels of service that you have been able to provide over the pandemic then.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we're feeling the same challenges with restrictions that the others are feeling. At the beginning of the first lockdown in March, we didn't know sort of how to turn things off, because we were very much connected with people who had no place to go at that moment, and so we shut down our sort of group programming, and that really didn't recover too much through the year. We were able to do some during the summer and fall period, but for the most part, our group programming went way down. Our community dinner was closed down immediately, and so we switched our efforts to meeting people who were out in the community struggling. We partnered with Transition House to work on some projects and support what they were doing, so that we could open up the emergency shelter for the daytime. We provided staffing there. And then the other piece that we saw increasing was some organizations didn't feel safe to have their staff kind of doing face-to-face work in the community. We were trying to be as safe as we could, but we sort of felt like we were out there already, and some work needs to be done face-to-face. And so one example is for a number of years, we've been distributing harm reduction supplies to people who use drugs. And that's a partnership Arn from Peterborough, and so they asked us to take on some extra work and cover a wider area for a while, because we were here in the community. So that generated some new opportunities, some new relationships, and so we're coming out of the year of that kind of work, feeling like we've kind of expanded our network of relationships, and there's some good opportunities. We're feeling better going into a bit more of a lockdown because of the connections that we got in place. So it's feeling quite different from the initial lockdown that felt like it happened quite suddenly.
A number of key players in the area of public health released a report in November called Preliminary Patterns of Circumstances Surrounding Opioid-Related Deaths in Ontario During COVID-19. That report delivers some shocking statistics. David or Phil, whoever wants to speak to this, I'd like to know, what are you seeing here in Northumberland when it comes to opioids?
Yeah, I think that report is fairly accurate. The opioid crisis that was very active and a large concern for us before the pandemic shifted during the pandemic, and there was people who use opioids, there was a lot of fear initially and anxiety if what they need isn't available suddenly, you're going to get very sick. You're going to have some real difficulty, and so there's a lot of anxiety around that. So that was actually an opportunity for us to meet with some folks that we hadn't been meeting with before, and talk about anxiety and talk about options and talk about safety. There was the desperation around drug use increased. We saw overdose deaths continuing at about the same rate as they had before, which has been until recently about one person a month dying from an opioid overdose in Northumberland. Most of those in Coburg over the last couple of years. we saw the number of overdoses increasing and so people surviving those, which was a positive and is a result of the harm reduction work and having a naloxone kit in the hands of folks. You mentioned treatment as well, and that's one of the big difficulties. So if I can just paint a picture that is based on several situations, a person who's using opioids, other drugs, decides it's time for a change and they want out of that and they want to do something. That person is living in either homeless or living in very marginal situations, maybe a rooming house, maybe sleeping on somebody's floor. They get on a waiting list for a number of months, and so they're trying to manage their drug use so that they stay alive until they get to the treatment program. The government treatment programs are typically about a month long. That person gets to the treatment program, comes back out, and has nowhere else to go except the drug house where they were living or living unsheltered. And so those stresses are there. And so that cycle is really difficult to break when there are so many pieces missing.
Phil, if I've been listening to this and I would like to participate in the Coldest Night, what should I do?
Well, it's very easy, actually, for anyone with a computer. There are several ways to sign up. The best way, once someone has decided they'd love to help us, is to go to the national website, and that is cnoy.org/PortHope. That will get you right to our fundraising page. It's easy to follow. A mouse click is all you need to register. You can register as a team. Should someone put their name forward as a captain, they can form that team. And that's really forming the backbone of our walkers. We really depend on team captains and walkers. So that's the best way that I can suggest that people sign up. Again, that's cnoy.org/PortHope. Should anyone wish any further information, I can be reached at 905-376-4771. That's my cell phone, and the folks can get in touch with me. If they wish to use an email trail, our email is cnoyporthope@gmail.com. Those are the best ways. It's very simple to sign up. All donations can be made by credit card or check. One difference this year, we are not accepting cash donations at all, either at the walk or prior to that. So that's the one little drawback this year. Should people wish to donate that way, I urge them to use my phone number, 905-376-4771, and I can always personally collect cash donations and then transfer them over through my account. So it's not all lost, but it's very easy to sign up. Just check out that website.
Now, besides the Coldest Night, what other activities should we be watching for in the upcoming months?
One thing that that is taking some of our attention with our staff and some of our members that volunteer is we're continuing to do home delivery of meals. We started this in August because we're not able to do the community dinner. So don't watch for the community dinner anytime soon. I'm not sure when something like a community dinner will ever be available again. But what we've been doing is home delivering with a porch delivery, a bit of a wellness check-in with folks, and doing that every week. And so we're doing about 100 a week of those, primarily through Port Hope at the moment, and others are doing some of that in other areas. We've got a couple of sort of larger projects coming up that we'll be sort of sharing with community. One large project is a partnership with the University of Toronto, looking at the opioid issue, and they're going to be studying our model and how this community-driven approach to reducing the harms of opioids happen. And so a number of those things will be sort of our activity. In terms of community events, we're looking to do some more online community 101 events. And I would encourage anyone who's interested in digging a little deeper into this kind of work and learning more about it to contact us and get on our mailing list. We have a monthly newsletter that goes out and it describes sort of opportunities for engagement, which are, you know, very different at the moment. But I'm looking at this as we look forward to, you know, the pandemic being over or being lessened in effect, that we have an opportunity until then to think about what kind of a world, what kind of a community we want to be building beyond that. And so there's a little bit of a chance to hunker down and have some discussions, learn some things, do some reading. And so we can help with those things for anyone who you know, really wants to commit themselves this kind of work. We would appreciate that opportunity. Great conversation yesterday with a couple of folks from a rural area that want to figure out how they can do this kind of work with their neighbors, look after each other a little better. And so we're always open to that kind of conversation as well.
Phil Redford, David Sheffield, thank you so much for talking to me today.
A pleasure, Robert.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Robert. It has been a pleasure.
That was my conversation with Phil Redford, the event chair for the Coldest Night of the Year Walk in Northumberland, and David Sheffield, executive director of the Greenwood Coalition. I want to thank both my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.